Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcasts currently feature the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening.
Today's scripture reading comes from the book of Luke, chapter 21, verses 1 through 4, the Message translation. Just then, he looked up and saw the rich people dropping offerings in the collection plate. Then he saw a poor widow put in 2 pennies. He said, "The plain truth is that this widow has given by far the largest offering today. All these others made offerings that they'll never miss. She gave extravagantly what she couldn't afford. She gave her all."
So today, we'll drop stones into the river, and the current takes them out into forever. And the truth is, most of us will never know where our best intentions go. And so we drop another stone. The empty still so hears a call to live in the center of the ache and awe. Is there hope for the whole world chimes? And yes, there's still time. So today, we'll drop stones into the river, and the current takes us out into forever. And the truth is, most of us will never know where our best intentions go. So I'll drop another stone.
I want everyone to know I really don't like swimming. Just think about that as what's being passed to you is a piece of paper, and if you don't have a pen, take one. And then just hold on to those during the sermon, and then you'll hear later what you're going to do with it. Makes you curious, huh? Good. That's good. It's funny that we're in the midst of this series going deeper, and I have to confess that I don't like swimming. I also want you to know I am not a strong swimmer at all, even when I do swim. I like to watch other people swim. I really prefer to be in the bleachers. I have a swimming child, you know, swim team, years swim team. I really love to be on the beach. On the beach. That's nice while y'all swim. I like to sit on the rocks and look out while other people swim and, you know, maybe are going to get torn up by those rocks. All these things go in my mind. I really just don't like to swim. So, you would have thought that I would have remembered that when Mark and I, on our trip to Hawaii, decided to paddle, don't change that slide, Brian, across that bay. You would have thought I might have remembered that. That is Kealakekua Bay on the Big Island in Hawaii, and it's the largest, I have since learned, sheltered bay in the islands. It's like 1.5 miles wide and 1 mile out, or vice versa. I don't know. It's over 1 mile both directions. You get my... It's huge. It's really huge. So we decided, because we were out there, that we were going to kayak across this with Mark's sister. Okay, now you can change it. This is not us. This is the wonder of Flickr. And that's not me in a bathing suit, so don't even think it. I wish. And through the wonder of Flickr, what I can tell you is those houses that are there on the left, there's one in the back with a kind of a red roof. You probably can't see it, but that's where we were staying for the month. And that's where you get in the kayak and get out of the kayak. So just leave that up there, please. So we set out in the morning, and we took our time. It was beautiful. And once we reached our destination, which was all the way across that bay to a little tiny monument in honor of Captain Cook who landed there, we had a beautiful picnic lunch. You know me, the food was brilliant. We had wine pairings, you know, it was good. And then we finished our time and decided to head back. So Mark and I were in a kayak like that, and his sister was in a single kayak. And off we went. She took off ahead, and you know, the breezes were blowing now. It was so nice. It was so nice. And I love Hawaii. But what I learned that day was I had not done the work that I needed to do in order to fully explore the depths of what that island had to offer. Because don't do it yet. When breezes come across a large body of really calm, smooth, transparent as glass, quiet, unruffled water, except for your kayak that's romantically going across it. When breezes come, and the stronger they get, the bigger the wind, this is what happens. Now you can show. That's a picture of that bay. Not me surfing. And I told you I do not like to swim, and I'm a very, very weak swimmer. I'm not any kind of swimmer, actually. And did I tell you the part about no life jackets? No life jacket. So just leave that up there. I've since learned a really important lesson. Here's the lesson. When a wave comes at you, go deep. I had no idea. No idea. Of course, that's not an idea you would have, especially if you're someone like me who doesn't swim and doesn't snorkel and doesn't scuba dive like my husband. And I go for the instinct, which is one of two things. Either you stand your ground and you figure the wave will go around you, right? Or the second is you turn and run. Neither of which works when you're in the water, right? Neither works when you're in the water. It is not a natural instinct to understand that you can go deep and swim under a wave. At least it isn't for me. But when you do that, very often, more times than not, you come out the other side of the wave transformed and not dead. So, I hadn't learned the lesson. I wasn't on the shore where I could have done those other two options. So what is left for me? Since I'm standing in front of you, you know I didn't drown. I got rescued. Because that's the only other option. You have to get rescued. So just think about that for a little bit. Hold on to that. And I'm going to talk about this Bible passage now that Sarah read for us. It's known as the widow's mite. And I want to say a word about where it is in the Bible for us. A couple weeks ago, we talked about a fig tree and Jesus talking about the fig tree and the coming of heaven. This story comes right after that. Right after Jesus talks about the fig tree and the buds on the fig tree, and that you learn that the buds on the fig tree mean the new season is coming, right? So the passage that Sarah read comes right after the people have been thinking about the kingdom of heaven. And it tells about a poor widow who is donating 2 coins, all she has, is what we're told, into the treasury of the temple, the place of worship. And she happens to do this, just happens to do this, when Jesus is sitting there with all of his disciples, watching. And Jesus notes that the widow gives by far the largest offering of the day. Because, he says, she gives a higher proportion of her total worth. One theologian says it like this. Let's note that Jesus doesn't really say that the others who have given a lot more money than she has are showing off or anything. The others are simply giving more, none of which they'll miss. The implication being that the 2 coins that this widow donates will be sorely missed. But let's also note that Jesus is not really praising the widow either. He describes her. She gave extravagantly. But he doesn't walk over to her. He doesn't hug her. He doesn't congratulate her. He simply calls his disciples' attention to notice her, to notice the others that are giving, and to compare what she does with what everybody else is doing. He invites them to wonder. That's what we do with our children in godly play. He invites them to wonder. Wonder about what? I think he's inviting them to wonder about the disparity there, right? Between abundance and poverty. Between large sums of money and 2 little coins. Between apparent sacrifice, because those priests were giving a lot, and real sacrifice. He's not name-calling. He's not saying anybody's wrong. Neither party is wrong. He doesn't dismiss the gifts of those who give extravagantly or those who give a large amount. He simply points out that the major characters are minor givers, while the minor character, that poor widow, turns out to be the major donor of them all. But we're not exactly sure why yet. One theologian about this passage said this. It's Jesus' last dizzy lesson in the upside-down kingdom of God, where the last shall be first and the great shall be the servants of all, and the most unlikely people will turn out to have been Christ himself in a disguise. This poor widow is his last case in point. After he leaves the temple that day with his disciples, his public ministry is over. In 4 days, he will be dead, having uncurled his own fingers from around his own offering to give up the 2 copper coins of his life, his whole life. So it would be really great if we could hear this story and we could sit here with clarity, I think, and understand exactly what we're supposed to take away from it. Wouldn't that be great? I would love that if the Bible was ever that way. But while we might not exactly feel certain about what we are going to take away from this story this morning, I do feel certain about the question we can bring to it. Our question is, how deep? How deep are we supposed to go as followers of Jesus? How deep is our church supposed to go as a community of followers of Jesus? How deep do we need to root our lives in grace? How deep do we need to grow in faith? Remember that wave coming at me every minute. It didn't stop. Wave after wave. We were supposed to somehow, Mark and I, negotiate those waves and get to shore, and that was not going to happen. We had no idea how to work our kayak to achieve that goal. The guide was back on that cement place you saw in the first slide. It was clear, we learned later, I mean, everybody was watching us, that we were in trouble. So the guide jumped in and swam out to us. His first question to us out there, hanging on that kayak, was very clear. He asked both of us, "Can you swim in?" Mark said, "Yes." I said, "No way." I mean, he told Mark to go. Now. And Mark dove off the kayak and swam to shore. And I'm not going to talk about that part of the story. But he told me, the guide, to stay where I was. And the guide tried to get out of the water and get on the kayak in the front, I think, in the front, yeah. And he did that, and then I sort of got on there, sort of, and then it just tipped over again as soon as the wave came. And they kept coming, and that kept happening. He would try and get on, I would try and get on, and we would tip over, over and over. Finally, with one hand on the kayak, and then he grabbed me by my ponytail, the guide did. He got on, and then he said, "You are going to get on this kayak. Don't you know how?" Like, and I'm not saying just no. You guys know me. And so then he screamed at me, "Get on and lay flat." Well, I hadn't laid flat when I got on, you know, to do this, so I wasn't trying to get on and lay flat. I didn't know that. So he told me, "Get on and lay flat and put your hands around my belly." So I did, and it worked. Oh, my God. I haven't thought about this for a while. I hate thinking about it. And then, in my own mind, we were going to be saved and go right in there. And what did he do? Can anyone guess exactly what he did? Can I have the bay slide again? Does anybody know what he did? Yeah, exactly. He paddled out. Out into the middle of that bay, where the day before I had seen whales. This is where whales come on the Big Island to have their babies. Whales! Okay? That's where he paddled out. Way further than our lunchtime picnic, way deep. And I thought I was in the deep, and I couldn't believe it. And we got out there, and we were truly in deep waters. But what happened was that the waves weren't close together anymore out there. Actually, they didn't even look that big out there on the kayak. And then he turned us around. He said, "You can get up and sit." And I'm like, "No, I just stay like that." And he paddled us right in back to that dock. Can I have the dock picture again? Because what I want you to see about where she's standing, see, you have to come around that corner. And he just went, shoop, and I climbed out, not like that, because Mark and his sister and all these strangers that I didn't know were there, and they just lifted me up. And I was not in good shape. Not at all. You know, we believe that everyone in this room, in some fashion, actually comes in these doors because on some level, you really do want to find a way in your life and faith to go deep. And we actually also believe that everyone in this room has the capacity to do that. Because you see, the journey of faith is full of people to help you and full of people who want to travel with you. And if you need it, we'll rescue you too. And all of us bring to that journey this question, how deep? And then we get an answer at some level, at some point, and then we live into that answer. How deep? I have to get on that kayak. How deep? Got to go out. And then we ask the question again and again and again and again. It goes like this in this community. 5 years ago, and you know some of this story, but some of us are new here today. So we repeat it. So we remember and learn. This place had a leaking roof, and there were catch buckets all around this area up here, from that up there. And they asked at the time, how deep are we willing to go? Deep enough, they said, to take and risk taking out a loan with the faith that somehow God had something in store for this community. And then we went deeper. 3 years ago, we were in a really difficult place, and we said, how deep are we supposed to go? Deep enough to understand that saying yes to rethinking church and to God's unfolding future, saying yes to that meant we had to open up our financial books and be transparent about our true state of financial viability. And then we had to say yes to Linda Ramirez when she said, maybe our communities should come together. We had to say yes to that. And we went deeper. And this year, we've received the last of our funding grant from our larger church. And we find ourselves in the position of being deeply grateful for the ways in which we've been able to receive all these resources and been able to turn those into rooting our lives in grace with weekly worship that has people in the room and 3 godly place sanctuaries so that our children can be rooted in grace and 9 or 10 kitchen tables where we can grow in faith. And projects where we can reach in love, like Winter Sanctuary, and giving backpacks to Mustard Seed School. But still we ask the question, how deep are we going to go swimming this time? Because you see, our journey to assess how we're doing in God's call is to grow and exceed it more. We reach in love, and then we start the whole process over again. It's a circular process, because if we all end up doing only one part of something, like reaching in love, you know, then we lose track. We lose track of the story because we stop coming to worship, or we lose track of going deeper because we don't join a kitchen table. We lose track of God, so we have to keep going deeper and deeper still. So this is the third year that we've invited our community to consider setting goals for yourselves in each of the areas that are listed on our deep commitment cards. And those are in your worship folders, right? Right. And we're not turning those in for another couple weeks. But it takes time to figure this stuff out. How do you want to root your life in grace in the coming year? Or how do you hope to do that? And we want everyone to consider setting a specific goal or a set of goals regarding your weekly worship attendance and daily prayer. And how do you plan to grow in faith? We want you to consider setting goals regarding kitchen table participation, searching scripture, witnessing to God's love in the world, or maybe taking the blueprint class if you haven't done that yet. How do you want to reach in love this year? We want you to consider setting specific goals for watching over other people in love, in a way that serves our community and beyond. And we want you to write these down to help us clarify. Because if we write things down, we can stick with them. If we clarify our hopes for faithful living and going deeper in our faith, we can actually achieve it easier. Because if we don't write them down, it's really, you don't get to have a party at the end and go, "Whoa, look what I did!" Because you forget, really, if we're honest. It's the case that when we have no goals and no benchmarks for growth, actually, we may not even if we do grow, we may not even recognize our growth at all. And when that happens, that's what I think is like the same as treading water. Just treading water. Keeping things afloat rather than moving around and being alive and growing. Treading water, you've seen people do that, right? Because it looks to people on the shore like maybe you're swimming or moving a bit. You're not drowning, you're not in trouble, you're out there, but you're not going anywhere either. Sometimes it's hard to know the difference. I recognize that. Carrie Newcomer's song that Casey sang, "The truth is most of us will ever know where our best intentions go." Hard to live with that sometimes. But let's remember the question that we're bringing to the scripture passage this morning. It's how deep. We established the difference between the widow's giving and the giving of those priests, right? In proportion, her giving is sacrificial compared to theirs. But there may also be a way in which Jesus, in recognizing how the widow is doing her giving, actually, it may be that she's treading water a little bit. Hard to believe. Some of you are sitting there going, no, that is not what that passage says. But maybe she is treading water. Because if you think about it, that widow cannot really be happy with her life. Not in my opinion, anyway. She can't. She doesn't have enough money to live on. She has no standing in the community. She's a widow in Jesus' day. Her husband died. She has no one to care for her. That's how things worked. The system which establishes that very way of life is the temple. And she's giving money to it. Her giving and the cumulative giving of all the faithful and well-meaning people around there keep that temple afloat. That's hard to figure that out. Stones in the river. There's no easy answers. Because you might say that any amount of giving to any institution that has contributed in any way whatsoever to a world of folks who have been burned and bored by church needs to be questioned. Right? And that's whether it's a widow who, having her last two coins, will now go and put them in the treasury and then leave the church and not know where she's going to eat because she just gave away her food money. And it may be the same for a person putting money in the offering who knows that if they really live out their life, like their sexual attraction to the same gender, if they really are truly who they are, they're going to get kicked out of the very church they're putting the money in the offering plate, right? It's questionable because on some level it perpetuates the very thing that's causing harm in the first place. You might say that. So that's why when we talk in Blueprint class about living our lives and asking ourselves the question every week, how can I keep from doing harm? We say there are no easy answers to that. There are no easy answers. And we have to make choices like that every day. So, the story of the widow's offering suggests that faithful giving, then, why would you do it? It's not for the sake of who's getting the money, maybe, right? It's rather for the sake of the life of the person giving it. Another way to say that is faithful living flows organically from the life of the giver. If the ends are assured in the economy of God, then only the means, how we do it, remain. And the ends are not financial security. The end is the kingdom of heaven on earth, which is also the beginning, right? Back to Carrie Newcomer, there's a phrase in that song, the empty self still hears the call to live in the center of the ache and the awe, A-W-E, the both and. It's there the hope of the whole world shines, and yeah, there's still time. We can still do it. So we have a choice. We all have a choice. So think about your life this last week. What concrete act of faith did you engage in? Where'd you put your two coins this week? How do you want to keep putting your two coins? What's keeping you if you're not giving any coins? What's keeping you and holding you back? I began this sermon telling you about how much I don't like to swim, right? I began that way, but here's a part I left out. In 1985, when I think it was 85, might have been 84, I can't remember the year I got married, but we went to Hawaii on our honeymoon. That I know. And we got to go for 2 weeks. The first week was in Maui, and the second week was in Kauai. For the whole first week, I never got in the water. Well, I never got in the ocean. I got in the swimming pool at the hotel. Mark kept inviting me. He's a fish. He was a water polo player in high school, okay? He's a fish. He's a scuba diver. He's a body surfer. But I stayed on the shore. So the second week, we went to Kauai. And we stayed in this hotel, and I was so happy because all the water out there, coconut palms, there's signs posted, do not swim here, riptide. And I was like, yeah. See, honey, we can't swim. We can stay in the pool. And he said, well, let's try something. And he took me north. Now you can show it. To Lumahai Beach. Maybe you've seen this in the movies. It's the Nurse's Beach in South Pacific, that old, old movie. Now, that is a calm beach, and it's not deep. And he said, just, like, go into your ankles. So here's what happened. I was raised in California. I walked in the water, and I was shocked. It was warm. I had no idea. I had no idea. And I didn't believe him. We were just married. I didn't believe him. I only knew Santa Cruz, Stinson, and Drake's. It's freaking freezing. That's all I knew. I was so happy in that water. I regretted that first week so bad. And I thought, we will never have money to come back here again, ever. Because that was a gift. His uncle gave us our honeymoon. In the moment that I realized how much I regretted it, I made a promise, though, to myself, too, that if I ever did get back, that I would snorkel, and I would swim, and I would do all kinds of things in that water. And we did go back. And I was ready. Because I knew the water was warm, and that made everything possible, and I freaking almost died. See what happens when you go deeper? I was so ready, because it was 20 years later, or 19, whatever. It was before Harrison was born, is what I mean. I sort of categorized my life like that. So, what I learned was then... So I learned that it was warm on my honeymoon. What I learned on that kayak thing was that being on the water is not really the same as diving under the waves. That's what I learned. So there are places we want to go, and we want to grow in faith. And a lot of us, frankly, have just mastered the surface. And actually, the surface can be pretty fun, and your bathing suit looks much better up there, in my opinion, right? You're dry. But it's beautiful under the water. It really is beautiful down there. It's a whole nother world. So how deep do you want to try and grow in faith this year?
Before we go into that, Stephanie and Sarah and Linda were at a gathering about worship and creativity and the arts a few weeks ago, and the paper that you have is its special paper. And so I want to invite you to take that paper out if you can find it. And I want to invite you to hold a couple of questions. And first, I want you to just hold that image of where you might be in relationship to going deep. Maybe you're on that shore looking at somebody else out there swimming. Maybe you're on the shore getting your kayak ready, but you're not quite sure if you want to go out on the water. Or maybe you've been in the water for a long, long time, but you're not really sure how deep you're swimming. So where are you in your own faith journey? Where are you with God right now? And our question is, what is keeping you from going deeper? If you're on the shore, what's keeping you from getting out in the water? Or if you're out there pretty far, can you imagine what it would be like to go through those deep waves, to go out into that further deep? What keeps you where you are? And we want to invite you to write a word or an image down that's keeping you wherever you are, whether that's on the shore or out in the water, to write that on the paper. And then once you have that, we move around during communion often in the sanctuary, but sometimes during prayer, it's hard for some of us to figure out, can we go over to the prayer stations? I want to encourage everyone, either during the prayer time or if you're not able to get up during that moment, during this moment, to do it before you go out today, to write this word down and then take it over to the water and drop this in the water and just see what happens, okay? God is doing something big in this community and in each of us. But sometimes we get caught up in the fears or the anxieties that keep us on the shore or keep us from going deep. So, how do you want to grow in faith? What is keeping you where you are? As we move into this song that will be our prayer, as you feel led, I'd invite you to take your word or image. There's water along the side and in the back. And for the really brave among us, you can come all the way up here and drop it up here.
You lead me, Lord. And I could hold on. I could hold on to who I am and never let you change me from the inside. And I could be saved, oh. I could be safe here in your arms and never leave home. Never let these walls down. But you have called me deeper. You have called me deeper. And I'll go where you will lead me, Lord. But you have called me deeper. You have called me deeper. And I'll go where you will lead me, Lord. You lead me. I will be yours, oh, I will be yours for all my life. And I will be yours, oh, I will be yours for all my life.